You're listening to Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
When a relationship is strained, how can a revolutionary couple endure? That's what Sci-Fi for Chicks will discuss in this episode of our Sleepy Hollow podcast, Date Night.
Why are you eyeing me like that? Do I look ridiculous? I look ridiculous. I have deciphered every code from Caesar Shift to Morse, yet the one that will always elude me is modern dress. How can one be both business and casual?
There. Hi, and welcome back to episode 2 of our 2015 Sleepy Hollow Marathon catch-up podcast. For the reason that it's a marathon, you need to go back to the past episode, Witness Represent. Had to get the fist bump in there. We're not going to re-explain why this is our marathon, but it is episode 2. We are going to be talking about season 2, episode 13 of Sleepy Hollow. Why do they do this to me, Alex? Petura Infamante? What, are we recording an Orphan Black podcast again with these titles that make no sense to me? Hi, my name is Heather, and I am joined by my supernatural sister witness from another time and place and set of parents, Alex. Hello, Alex.
We haven't heard from each other in so long.
So long.
Yeah.
You don't know what we do for you, listeners, really. You do not know how we suffer.
I mean, yeah, right. That, what she said.
It's a good thing that we like each other, Alex. It really, really is.
Oh, yeah.
So we've been talking about a lot about, you know, how Abby and Crane were such a really great match, that it was so hard to get anybody else into the story because they were just so cohesive and they were so perfect and they were so wonderful. How does anybody else stand a chance? And in our last episode, Witness Represent, I gotta do it. We were talking about the cracks that were now developing because Moloch, their whole goal was achieved. They've destroyed Moloch. So what do we do now? And cracks were developing. Orion helped that along. Abraham helped that along. But they're on the back burner now. They're both on the run or on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
Literally.
Nice one. Well done.
And it works with both of them, doesn't it? So what do we do now? We're kind of left in this non-major goal kind of thing. We are assuming we still have more demons and baddies to deal with, but it's still kind of a lull time. We don't have a big master baddie. So I think it makes sense that they try and come to grips with their life. I mean, just like at the, what was it, in the end of the, near the mid-season finale, when Crane and Katrina were having that disagreement, and he's basically like, okay, we need to talk about this later. Right now we have to deal with Moloch and Henry. We'll talk about that later.
Right now we are soldiers. Yeah.
Yeah, it's now later. So now it's time for us to deal with it. And we see them getting ready for their date night. And Crane gets all fancy schmancied up. I love Abby helping him get ready. It was just really so cute. You know, he's got the hair all done and the nice, clean, new, old clothes. And then we have Katrina walking in.
And wow.
And
remember how we talked about how Jenny looked amazing in the previous episode?
Uh-huh.
Like, oh my god, Katrina really embraced the date night. Because my reaction was similar to that of Ichabod, like, Betsy who? Hello there. Because she looked wow.
She really did. Wow. She looked really hot. She adjusted to those heels quite nicely, because those are not the kind of heels she would have worn back in the day.
Yeah.
Like subtle changes. Like her hair, it wasn't parted in this. Okay, we're starting very superficial, but sorry. Katrina needs a little love here, people. She needs some love. Even just like the hair, which was normally parted in the center and just kind of looking very, you know, revolutionary housewife kind of thing. Just even that slight side part and a little bit of extra in the makeup and a little bit of, she looked hello nurse kind of thing.
Yeah. And I think it really did show how they both were kind of nervous Mm-hmm. Because technically they're already married, but they did have first date jitters.
Well, they've been separated for quite some time.
And they had so many problems and miscommunications and, you know, secrets and all that. But they both kind of brought it. Both Katrina and Ichabod. Like, you kids go on the date because you... Ugh.
So and I like what you said, is like how they're both nervous. And I saw it. I think he was more visibly nervous, but you could see it on her too, that she's not sure. We love each other, but is that enough? Is that enough? In this, and also this discomfort, because he's taken, supposedly taken, to modern times much more readily than she has. Of course, she hasn't really had much time because she was... you know, stuck with Abe and Henry, and still, even when she had modern clothes, still had that corset, which I would love to see the last of and let her have some, you know, a little bit looser clothes, but okay, whatever. But she, you know, so she needed some of that hand-holding, he feels, you know, like adjusting to this new life. She walked in, and I'm like, I think she's adjusting pretty well. Hey, come on. She's looking pretty good. She's looking pretty good.
Oh yeah. And I loved Abby's reaction. Like, this was her sending them out on a date and like making sure that Ichabod is looking good and everything. And when he saw Katrina and when Betsy who? Yes. That little Abby's comment of good answer.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
doing good. Now go get a tiger. It was just witnesses at their best.
Yeah.
That's the kind of tiny interactions.
It was a really great way too, because we really do need to see that. Like we've been talking about how in season one, it was this wonderful, pure, idealistic idea of they're this great love, but we couldn't really see any of it because she's stuck in purgatory and we only see her through a mirror. And then coming back, this is what I think we've been waiting for, is to start seeing them together. And it made sense too, because here we have another one where we're going to separate the witnesses. Crane's going to go this way. Abby's going to go this way, but it's not something that is because there's a conflict. It's because it's something natural that needs to happen. Your wife is here. You two need to get reacquainted. You two need to go out, and I'm not a third wheel. So you two go have fun. And it made sense.
And I'm going to go,
Totally made sense.
I also liked that they weren't separated, like, in the previous episode because of a case. Mm-hmm. That they were pursuing two different aspects of it.
Mm-hmm.
But they were separated because they didn't anticipate any problems.
Exactly.
It was supposed to be a date night. It's like, you know... you go out and I'm going to go do my thing because we are still, you know, individual, people with, you know, things to do, like reading my ancestor's journal while you go and romance your wife. So, you know, it made sense.
It reminded me of that episode when Hottie actually was able to come to the forefront again. Wasn't that the succubus one where it made sense because that Crane took a backseat because Crane was sick. It wasn't some, or, you know, why is he gone? It was like, he's sick. That's why he's taking a backseat. This, like you said, this made sense. Why they were separated. It's a date night. I don't need to be the third wheel. This is normal. Everything's happy-go-lucky. Just go. So it was very, we keep using this word, organic, I thought. And a great way to get them going. Just like all that produce. Isn't it by nature organic? Well, this was very organic. But we still have some of that cute. I know it's the writers, but I just love how Tom Meissen, I just love Tom Meissen, but I love how Tom Meissen delivers them too when he is trying to make sense of business casual. Throwing those in, he thinks he's so well adjusted to modern day, yet he questions something like business casual. Katrina was not questioning her outfit at all. She's just going, I look good.
She embraced it, basically.
So did.
But I loved the contrast between him being, confused with Abby over business casual, And then explaining to Katrina that public displays of affections are okay. And that there is a term saying get a room.
Yeah.
When the groping goes slightly farther. And I loved that contrast because it showed that even though he still has moments of frustration, confusion, what is this world that I found myself in, he is, like you said, more comfortable, and he's been here longer, so he absorbed much more knowledge and customs and those little things that that would probably confuse anybody out of time, and is able to relate them and explain them to Katrina pretty much in the same tone of voice as he does when explaining demons, artifacts, and historical information. And I loved how they did that whole thing. It was it's a little thing, but it gave me great joy.
You know what I think is really great though too, on the flip side of that, is how both Katrina and Abby react to when he does this. It's like I always sense with both of them this little underlying, yeah, I got it. I'm not that slow. You know, it's like I'm, you know, the woman thing. It's like, really? I got
it. I'm going to indulge you.
I'm going to indulge you and let you just share all your knowledge. I'm not that far behind you, really.
But yeah, it's that indulgence. Mm-hmm. And you can actually see that indulgence when they have to, you know, listen through Ichabod's explaining something that they got 3 sentences ago. But okay, yes. Yeah. Yes, mm-hmm. Honey. Tell us more.
Tell us everything. So you guys know, yes, we women do that. Sometimes we reach that breaking point where we can't anymore, but just know that you're usually going...
Usually it's just, okay, fine, honey.
Yeah, you're usually going 3 or 4 sentences beyond where you really need to go on that. I'm going to go ahead and get my one beef, and this is my minor technical beef kind of thing that I do when it's just that the small little technical thing that gets me. We have them going on their first date, basically, to this whole historical society thing at the Adams home, Abigail and John Adams. Notice how I put Abigail first on that one, because, you know, she's still our historical connection in this one. And we have a historical connection for Katrina. I like that. We're going to talk more about that in a bit. But they're going on this first date here for this historical society art show at the Adams house. Not even, this continues later. Everybody's walking around touching John and Abigail Adams stuff. They're touching the paintings. They're touching the furniture. They're touching this. When it becomes a crime scene later, Katrina and Crane are walking around in their regular shoes while you see the CSI people with their little booties on so as not to contaminate the crime scene. I'm like, everybody is touching everything. And trust me, if you go to any historical site like that, Abigail and John Adams house, you would not be able to touch anything. Okay. There's my
God,
little technical
thank
rant.
Goodness that she said that, because I did what I always do when watching American TV, and I just assumed it's an American thing.
No, because... you can't do that.
Because here you would get lynched if you touched anything.
This
saying that you wouldn't be able to touch anything because there is half a meter barrier between you and the art that you're supposed to look at. But I just assumed it's an American thing, like, you know,
it's
things.
It's not. The only way I could see this happening is if they were billionaires. We bought out everything. This is my stuff. Yeah, I can touch it. I'm like, yeah. Katrina and Crane don't have that kind of money. And I know Crane's really big in the reenacting stuff. But I don't think they go, you know, you're such a good reenactor. We'll let you touch all of this precious historical memorabilia and art and such from our second president and one of our founding fathers. Yeah, no. Technical beef.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that we mind it.
So just
you
so
more than I.
Yeah. Just so you writers know, we caught you on that one. We're going to forgive a lot of things, but we got to point out when I've got to point out when something technically really bothers me. Okay, so let's get back into the story. I've ranted. You've agreed, and I've ranted on the ludicrousness of that. Actually, I'm going to get into another rant here. Ooh. The other thing I didn't like, and this is something that we talked about in a previous episode with Caroline. What was her name that you loved? Jane?
She played Jane Bennett on Lizzie Bennet Diaries.
There we go. We have Grant Hollister, who is an art restorer and a friend of Ichabod Crane's. This is a friend that he has outside of Abby and Jenny and Irving and Hottie and even outside of Headless. I mean, I'm going to put Headless in this category. They're not good term friends, but they have a connection. He's got a connection with somebody totally outside that. And he's an art restorer. And he's cleaning a painting that starts to bleed. And I'm like, oh, yet another one of Crane's friends is going to die. I thought we maybe resolved this after Caroline died, and it was just terrible. With, you know, Ichabod talking about losing another person. We've lost another friend, Alex.
Yeah, it's kind of... It is, I don't know how to put it. Basically, what it makes me think of is Derek Hale on Teen Wolf.
Mm-hmm.
And the question of how much we can kick a person before they break.
Right.
It may not be as traumatic or as dramatic with Ichabod as it is with Derek, because Ichabod has a great support system. But the thing is, it's like all the bad things that happen to a person. I think I talked about it on our Orphan Black podcast when we were talking about Helena.
Mm-hmm.
Every time writers do something to a character, it is to get some reaction from us, viewers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the first traumatic event that happens to a character, viewers go, oh my goodness, you know, the shock factor, the drama factor, and we feel sympathy for a character. But the more the character gets kicked, the less we care, because we get desensitized and we get used to the fact that everybody around Ichabod Crane dies.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, after I don't know how many deaths, how many kicks to Ichabod's life, we will stop caring. Like, I think I already reached that level, because when Ichabod's friend died in this episode, I didn't care that he was Ichabod's friend.
Mm-hmm.
At first, as I was watching it, it didn't even occur to me to perceive this as Ichabod's loss.
Mm-hmm.
Like I did with Caroline. I perceived it as a way of putting, you know, the plot farther ahead, getting ahead and you know, getting the stakes up. Mm-hmm. But I didn't see it as Ichabod's personal loss. So
which is
I
a
already
shame.
Reached Yeah, which means that I already reached that desensitized level of, yeah, Ichabod Crane is going to get kicked, and I'm going to enjoy the story, but I'm not going to feel pain for him.
Right, and I agree, because, I mean, I love that moment when his friend says, you know, hey, Ichabod, you got a minute? Can we talk? And they go aside and talk, and I'm like, okay, so we have a friend. I even wrote in my notes, shocker, I have notes, that, I mean, the exact line that I wrote was, Crane loses yet another friend. And after watching this episode, I'm like, why could we not have flipped it? Why could the curator, who also touched the painting, I mean, I know that his friend Grant, the restorer, touched it first.
Yeah.
But, you know, the curator did touch the painting, because that's when Katrina got that jolt saying that she felt a dark presence. So he's touched it too. If we had flipped it and the curator was the one that gets grabbed first and we first find hanging upside down as the hangman, but Grant, his friend, is the one that gets pulled into the painting and they have to save, it would have made that saving to me even much... Right now they're just saving him because if he dies, if the curator dies, then the painter, murderer, whatever, it's can released, get out and be released. So it's just that kind of thing. If we had it flipped where it was his friend, you not only have
it would
that,
make the save so much precious.
Yeah, it's more precious. Yeah. I need to save this. And if you could pull back on that, I lost Caroline, not him saying this necessarily, but I lost Caroline. I'm not going to lose another modern day friend. I think it would have made it so much more impactful because I really didn't care. The only reason they were saving the curator was for the greater purpose, not for a personal purpose.
Yeah, you're right. I actually agree with that. And it would
actually
make it... Yeah, yeah, I actually agree with that.
She actually agrees with me.
It would have so much better impact on everything. Mm-hmm. Because, in a way, I think Ichabod would approach it with more desperation. When if they were to try and save his friend. Mm-hmm. Because when they were trying to save the curator, he just slipped back into that soldier role.
Right.
That they had before they defeated Moloch. It was another case of stopping it. Mm-hmm. In a way, I think I didn't notice Graham's death as a personal loss, because Ichabod didn't really have such a devastated reaction at the loss.
Yeah.
It didn't register. He didn't really mourn his friend. He was so sad after Caroline died. And here it was, you know, he died. Let's solve it.
So I don't understand how the writers missed this opportunity, because they've been really good. I know we're only in the second episode of the second half of the season, but they've been really good at doing some of those reflection moments where they have, you know, something happens one way and then it happens again, similar but different. Like we were talking about the opening, how, you know, when we came back at the beginning of the season and we're in purgatory and we're like, what? And how they did a similar kind of opening, but different.
Yeah.
For the beginning of the second half of the season, and how they do these reflection kind of things, it would have been a perfect reflexive counterpoint to the Caroline. It would have made, you know, you can touch back to that. And like I said, I don't want to lose another friend, because that Caroline death hit him so hard. Not that he was necessarily closer to Grant, and I'm sure he would have felt more protective over the fact that Caroline died, you know, with his 18th century sensibilities and her being a woman and all this. I'm sure there would have been something more there with that, but it would have just brought such a wonderful character and brought it more personal. Like you said, he did. He flipped back into soldier. And that, in turn, I think, made Katrina also be very soldier-like with the outcome. But she had the personal part because of her Abigail Adams connection.
Yeah. I think... while it wasn't necessarily bad storyline, because it was really good. I enjoyed it a lot.
It was a missed opportunity.
I do feel, it was a huge opportunity that the writers just missed. And I'm kind of disappointed, because Sleepy Hollow writers have an incredible record of keeping things connected. And, you know... calling back to all those things that happened several episodes ago. And here is like, dudes, guys, there's so much you could have done here. You could have made it even more emotional, even more intense, without even trying. And it's not that I'm disappointed in the storyline, because it was really good. But I feel like I'm kind of mourning for what could have been.
Mm-hmm. It was a good story. It could have been a great story with tweaks.
Exactly.
It could have been great. It really could have. Because I like that we've had so many flashes with Crane thinking back to his revolutionary times, all the people he knew. The Cranes were very well appointed and connected, because they knew every important person, it seems, from colonial revolutionary America. But they've all been Crane's people. Everybody's been on Crane's side. And now we have Katrina, you know, her mourning the loss, which I like how she even said how she's mourning the loss of her friend as she touches these things, that she has this connection to Abigail Adams, having delivered five of their children, which as a history buff, I'm kind of like, ooh, now we're putting her in like a very intimate position. This isn't just, you know, Crane knew George Washington, Crane knew Ben Franklin, Crane knew Abigail was in a very intimate relationship with Abigail Adams, and her thinking about her friend and missing her friend and having that connection, and bringing such a strong woman as Abigail Adams, because she is a very strong historical presence in our history. She's a very, very strong woman. I really liked seeing that side, and it brought this really great personal side to Katrina. At the same time, we're having not as personal side with Ichabod. And yeah, so missed opportunity. I liked seeing that side of Katrina because it made her more human, less witch, less wife, less, you know, whatever, mother. This, it seemed very human. And here she is talking about her friend and relating back to her friend. And I thought that was a good touch.
I enjoyed the flashbacks, for all the reasons that you mentioned, but also additionally
for Michelle
for the fact
Trachtenberg.
That they, yes, I completely loved her in Buffy, as Dawn Summers, and to see her all grown up.
Oh, she's so grown up.
Because I've seen her, yeah, but I've seen her in other work. I've seen, most recently, I think I've seen her in Criminal Minds, but she didn't look as mature as she did in those flashbacks.
Mm-hmm.
She really sold me on the fact that she was Abigail Adams, that she had this authority to her,
mm-hmm.
and this strength of character. It was like, oh, my Donnie, all grown up, look at her. It was like, oh. It's like you, when you see your kids all grown up, you know, doing things and accomplishing things, and just... Oh.
Well, you know, something that was nice to see with her, too, and not that you would know a lot about Abigail Adams. gee, I wonder why...
Yes, teach me of your American ways.
But a lot of times when Michelle Trachtenberg is playing a character, she seems to be a little bit more on the fragile side, or there's something, you know, that other people need to protect or help or guide or whatever, which, not saying anything bad, you know, that's the role she cast. Abigail Adams is a woman of herself. She does not need, I mean, her and John Adams were partners. She was not this subordinate. She was not this little wallflower that needed protecting. So to see her, Michelle, in a role like that, and even in those small scenes, embracing it the way she did, I believed it. I totally believed it. And I felt her conviction and her power when she's talking about wanting to, you know, really find this Durham killer, the killings that were happening back then. And using her smarts, which at the time really did make sense when she's talking about her and Kat figured it must be a doctor because of the precision of the cuts and what was happening. And so, you know, you see that they're not portraying the women as somebody else. They need the man. She didn't need Ichabod Crane to tell her how to do things. Abigail Adams didn't need John Adams telling her the way. These are two women that are figuring things out on their own. And I think it gave a nice strength also to Katrina, again, away from Crane and Abraham.
Yeah.
A little bit more insight into she is her own woman. She doesn't need the man to show her the way on everything.
I also really liked how Katrina took things into her own hands, so to speak, when she didn't let Ichabod go into the painting on his own.
Yeah.
It was, I really liked the way she asserted herself and established her position in their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I loved how she said, we're done being separated.
Right. Yeah.
It was such a powerful assertion of, nope, we're in this together. And we're going into the painting together, and we're going to fight this together.
Mm-hmm.
even despite their differences, despite everything that comes between them, I really loved how firm she said this. And don't you dare disagree with me, because we're going in there together. Mm-hmm. I loved it. I love Katrina. It's obvious and everybody knows it by now, but yeah. I really do.
Well, and Crane really liked her little distraction technique there, too. You know, when the people tried to come in, why are they in this room? And she was...
Oh, yeah.
Crane was kind of happy with that one. He liked that.
I liked his, but yeah, find another distraction.
For someone else. Yeah.
For someone else.
I know we've been having some problems, but still. You know, that's my distraction technique, and you can do it anytime you want. We also, I think, had a flip with them, too, when we did find poor Grant hanging upside down, and Ichabod starts talking about the hangman from the tarot deck, and Katrina's like, you know about tarot? It was, again, one of those great moments where she kind of underestimated him and what he was doing. So it's like, you two really do need to kind of sit down and maybe hash things out. Yeah, I think you need to talk a little bit more and realize what's going on. But I think that was a moment when she thought she would have had the upper hand in knowing what it was.
Yeah.
And he surprised her.
How they tied it back to their married life. Because, well, somebody left the deck.
Yeah.
Laying in the open. So, you know, la 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 la.
What's a guy to do?
I loved, well, yeah, what's a guy to do? Of course, normal guys would just, you know, ignore it. But Ichabod had to research.
Exactly.
Surprise, surprise.
Well, and of course, he also had to have the last word on that one. Another surprise. Surprise.
But I really liked how the date night really worked for them. Even though it wasn't the ideal date that they had in mind, I think that it really did bring them together.
You know, I do.
More, even though not all the conflicts are resolved.
Oh, no.
I think they're closer together now. After, you know, being on a date.
Yeah. They've come to, I think, a new understanding of they're starting this new path. We know we really have to learn more about each other. We have to go through this whole thing again, which is something you hear about in relationships, not that I would know about this, where people know each other so well. Like, say you're best friends, and you know each other really well, but then you go into a romantic relationship, and so you have to kind of relearn everything about each other, even though you know everything about this person. And that's kind of where I think they're starting, is they know so much about each other. But they've got to start from square one, and I think they have a good, clean square one to start at. And they have this understanding. And like you said, you know, we're doing this together. They're not going to do things separate anymore. She's not going to use their marriage as this, you know, pawn thing to try and get him to do what she wants him to do. And he's not going to, they're going to be this team now, which I think will be interesting in future episodes when it comes to Abby and Crane, that I think we're going to see a little bit more, you know, not battles, but just that little, everybody's got to make adjustments now, because Crane and Katrina are seeing the path that they need to go. If they are pursuing a life together, there's going to be some adjustments that are going to have to be made everywhere.
Yeah.
And I think they've got a good, nice, clean start. Something that wasn't so clean was our murder mystery story with the bloody knives and things. I like that Katrina figured out later, Katrina and Crane figured out that who else knows anatomy better than a doctor, but an artist, and you know, suddenly, let's see, you know, let's get into this mystery and to this bloodiness and this everything. Oh, let's go into our crime story a little bit. What did you think of how they did that with our artist Colby and the painting and the hanged man and going into the painting and coming out of the painting?
It was nice. I liked the way, I liked the idea and the way they played it. But to be perfectly honest, for me, the crime thing and the crime side of that particular plotline was just a background for the relationship stuff. that was established. And it helped that it was well written. And all the twists and turns of that crime, kind of took step by step. Oh my God, this is the same killer. Oh my God, the killer is in the, painting. I loved how creepy it was when the guy in the painting turned around.
Oh, that creeped me out. Creeps me out. That's a Twilight Zone kind of a moment there. Oh, creepy.
It was delicious, amazing. I loved it. And then I loved Katrina's little vision of his bloodied silhouette walking around the house.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they got into the painting, I loved the way it was shot, not completely, where the camera wasn't completely straight.
Mm-hmm. Dutch angle, yeah.
Like, yeah, it was... putting everything on edge, so to speak, pun very much intended. I liked how they worked it in. It would probably not be as good for the relationship side of the storyline if it was a weaker crime, like if it wasn't as well done. And I mm-hmm. would probably rant about how... it was just background and, like, they should have just got rid of it altogether. But it was an enjoyable side. It wasn't important enough for me to pay attention, like, oh my God, this is important. I should watch carefully. Not really. But it was a good addition.
It was enough, I think, that you cared that they solved it. That they figured it out and went together, but not so much that it felt overloaded. Now, I mean, it had little hints in there when they're walking around. It very much to me looked like there was part of his story had something to do with a lost child or something in there. Cause you had all these, like the rocking horse and things like that. So mm-hmm. it looked like they were planting seeds of what could have been motivation, but we're like, we don't need to know, but that there was something in there in the painter's past. And then her even talking about how Reverend Knapp, who was the head of her coven or part of her coven, mm-hmm. Was the one that actually imprisoned the painter. So they, you know, they really are tying this into, this is Katrina's story that Crane is being pulled into. Crane, you know, Katrina's not being pulled into Crane's past. Crane is being pulled into her past. I will say one thing that I found a little bad taste, tacky, but I did kind of laugh when they do find the curator hanging upside down in the painting and they're trying to lower him down, which I liked seeing that Katrina was struggling a little bit. So I'm like, okay, she's at least acting well. Like, here's this heavy guy that she doesn't want to drop on his head. We have the little line in there that says, "Hang in there, friend." Is that really a good thing to say?
Oh, it was hilarious. Come on.
I was like, huh. Yeah, I laughed. I did. But I'm like, really? That's getting kind of funny.
I gotta tell you, in that scene when they were lowering him down, I was like, really, Ichabod? Really? Katrina is going to be the one handling the rope?
The one in the dress and the heels and all. She's the one that's lowering down this whole body. And you're...
In what universe does this make sense? Yeah, I know See, this would make so much more sense if it was his friend.
Yes. Oh, exactly. See, then that would have been a reason why he would have...
Yeah, why he had to be the one to put him gently on the ground. Because mm-hmm. his friend and all that. But the curator and Katrina in those heels, like, when I was watching this, it was the most hilarious thing I've seen this episode. Yeah. Just like, really? Really? Well,
yeah, and even that line, flashing back to that whole curator thing, when the curator flee, you know, he's like, if I flee, they're trying to get him, go, leave, so you're not killed. If I flee, mm-hmm. they'll think I did it. So, I don't care. I have no connection to you. But if it was flipped, if it was Grant, his friend, that said that, and all, you know, then Crane does have this motivation where, oh, writers, you missed such an easy one. Easy flip. Easy flip. One thing they did not miss. Are we good pretty much on the Katrina crane.
Yeah.
One thing they did not miss, though, was the fact that when Abby's trying to get in touch with Crane, and he's in the painting, so I guess the phone, I guess cell reception inside paintings isn't that great. They come out, you know, they're chanting, they finally get out of the painting, the bad guy's coming after him, they're gonna be killed by this maniacal murdering painter, and Abby shoots him down, and her line, "You didn't answer your phone." This is, she knows something's wrong, because Crane, our 18th century man, didn't answer his phone. She's got to come to the rescue. Yay, Abby.
Yeah, but that's the thing. This is what Abby and Ichabod's relationship was like from the beginning. And I'm pretty sure that it didn't matter that Ichabod didn't answer the call. It mattered that he didn't answer when she was calling.
Right. And something's not right here. And she just knew. And because of that, she comes to the rescue at a very important time. Very important time.
Yeah, and I love how she doesn't even question Ichabod when he says, "Shoot the painting."
Oh, yeah.
If it was me, I would be like, "What? No, hello, murderer, right there, right in front of you. Yeah. Why do you want me?" But no, she was like, "Okay, Ichabod says shoot the painting." And did you notice how she shot the painting? In that cross?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Kind of...
the hangman cross, yeah.
Yes, I was like, brilliant.
Well, that goes to something, a small little thing. Like you said, Abby didn't question when Ichabod says shoot the painting. Yet his friend Grant, you know, a painting starts bleeding. I get out. This is an Amityville Horror thing. When the house tells you to get out, you get out. When the painting starts to bleed, I don't hang around and try and figure out why the painting's bleeding. So just goes again to show how smart our Abigail Mills is. And I do like one last thing on that. How Katrina, you know, Katrina still has a problem with Abby, but Crane is kind of making the connection. You know, we have Abigail Adams, we have Abigail Mills, you know, that trying to help her see this connection of helping and friends and bridging that gap a little bit. Because it's not that Abby and Katrina hate each other. It's just they're on opposite sides and they've got to find a way to have common ground too. And he's trying to do his little bit there. Now, speaking of Abby, in this episode, like you said, while Crane's off having his little date night, she goes back to the precinct and is looking through that diary, which at first I thought, when there was a commotion, oh my God, who's going to break in and steal the diary? That was the first thing that I thought.
That's exactly what I thought.
And I was really, I mean, so they caught me off guard because that made sense to me with how they were setting it up, that that's there or that there was going to be something and somebody's going to snatch that. She comes out and it's Irving stumbling back into the police department.
My precious baby.
Your precious baby.
Came to surrender and gave himself up. And I was like, what are you doing, you moron?
Well, I think it was like he didn't know what else to do. What else to do? Where else to go? I know that.
Intellectually, I knew that. But I was like, there is no way this is going to end well.
No.
Spoiler alert. It kind of ended okay, but I was like, no, what are you doing? Don't be an idiot.
How did you like that look on Abby's face when she sees Frank? I mean, it's been more than 6 weeks now since she saw Frank. And I like that she added this line. Like you were saying, we don't need to see everything that happened in those 6 weeks, but I do want to hear about some of it. And just that little line of like, we buried you. You know, so it's like, they had this final moment. They buried him. And then she went and told his family, Cynthia and Macy. And so I've had closure. I don't like it, but I have closure that my good friend died in this. And oh my God, who are you? What are you doing? And she stayed logical enough too to be questioning his return because she buried him. She saw this with her own eyes. She's hopeful, but she's not throwing away. Like she kind of with Orion, how she, here's an angel. Yeah. I've got a guardian angel. I'm just going to trust blindly. Oops. here's the man I've come to trust and love and care for. He's a good friend, and he's back, and he shouldn't be.
But then again, she kind of had a similar experience with Andy Brooks.
Yeah, yeah.
When he came back.
Which is exactly why she's questioning, yeah, with him coming back. Exactly. Although Andy had a little bit more of a neck problem.
Yeah.
Frank just doesn't have shoes.
But still, I loved how... and I loved the differences between the way she was dealing with the problem and the way Irving was dealing with the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm pretty sure that since he felt he was real, like he felt like a person, he felt like Irving, it didn't really occur to him that Abby would not believe him.
Mm-hmm.
Or that anyone wouldn't believe him. This desperation that you could see in his eyes and in his entire body language when he said, bring Cynthia, she will be able to tell that I'm me.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and the fact that he had no idea what had happened. He didn't even remember killing the horsemen of war.
Exactly.
He remembered the battle. So he's like, are we in purgatory? Is this hell? He thought they lost. It's like, no, we won. What the hell are you doing here?
You died, yeah. I really, really enjoyed it. I really did. And I really loved
it. I really loved, but it was also really mm-hmm. creepy, was when right after they take him into custody and he's sitting in the room and she's watching him for the first time on the camera. And he looks up at the camera and is just staring at it because he knows that camera's there. He's a police officer. You know, he used to be the captain.
He knows somebody's watching.
I think he knew that Abby was watching. And it was almost like mm-hmm. he was just bearing right into her, like, pleading with his eyes, Abby, 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 help, 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 because he didn't know. But yeah, when he's talking, I mean, I even made a note when he was talking with her, you know, the tears and the connection and everything, what Orlando Jones did was really powerful because I didn't know. I'm questioning just like Abby is, but he pulled me into what he must have been feeling.
There is no doubt. Orlando Jones just...
He killed it.
Acted the hell out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was incredible. I really loved the moment when he saw his wife. Right? Not to mention the fact that Abby actually made a point of telling Cynthia.
Yeah, I think it was really important that we saw that. That we saw Abby telling Cynthia. And, you know, because I really kind of forgotten, how do I forget this, when her daughter was possessed, you know, but I'd really forgotten that his wife and child had seen this side of the world, that they weren't still oblivious like so many other people were. And it made me go, okay, Abby went to her after he died, after this whole apocalypse something, again in those 6 weeks. We already know from how she acted with Cynthia that she went and she told them everything. And she said what a hero he was and what he did, you know, how he sacrificed himself, how she explained about the contract. I mean, Cynthia knew about all these things. So it wasn't something that happens in a lot of times in stories. We protect everybody. We're not going to tell them. We're not going to share this because, you know, we're going to keep information from you. And us as viewers are always saying, just tell everybody, you know, just share and things will be so much better. She did share with Cynthia. And then that look, you know, sharing everything, coming back and them having that connecting moment, I think was very important that we saw that. Very important.
No, I think the most important thing is that Irving is getting a huge storyline.
He's gonna get good too.
Yeah, and immediate and really big one.
Yeah.
Because there is no way, sure, the writers might have missed the opportunity of making the crime scene date night more personal for Ichabod, but there is no way they are missing the opportunity that bringing a character back from the dead gives you. Come on, it's going to be huge. And I love... Irving was crucial for them winning at the end, because he was incredibly important in that fight.
Mm-hmm.
And now it looks like that even though Moloch is dead, Irving is still incredibly important. There is no way he's just back. No, I can't even comprehend a world where writers would just bring him back. Sure, Orlando Jones rocks and is amazing and all that, but come on.
I knew he was coming back. Come on.
This is going to make up for all the Tarrytown episodes, I'm telling you.
Well, and something else that's really great about how they're doing this is we pulled Reyes back into the story in a very logical way. We saw her a few times. I think we're going to be seeing her more. We're not instantly, Frank is back and sorry, Reyes, you're out. So I see a door opening for her to have this storyline. We have her still, you know, she's upset that Abby went and talked to Frank after she told her, no, you don't. You don't talk to him. He is off limits to you. And yet she goes to talk to him. And then we see her kind of, I mean, she was a little bit of internal rage there when she tells Abby that the DA has vindicated Frank and Frank's now free, which I think Abby was kind of happy at the idea of him still being locked up because he's safe. And you know, kind of like how he was locked up in Tarrytown. Okay, you're safe, so I don't have to worry about you. You're in jail, I don't have to worry about you. Oh, you're out on the loose, and I have no idea whose side you're on or what you are or anything. Rut-row, but also Reyes is, she's not too happy with Abby, you know, for all this. And I think she's, I don't know, I think she's going to become a little interesting too. Not a huge story, but I think she's going to be a good supporting character.
Ichabod put it really well. It's good that one of us is on her good side.
Yeah, exactly.
Because she kind of got used to the idea of Ichabod being helpful. Like, she actually perceives Ichabod as somewhat helpful to some certain types of cases.
He was the good child now, in this episode.
And now Abby is the one in the doghouse.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you did something. You disobeyed me. So yeah. I might play nice right now. Because that whole speech about loyalty, I think that was Reyes's way of saying, I'll play nice, but you are still in the doghouse.
Yeah, I thought, and it was a good juxtaposition, because that is something that we have really liked in Sleepy Hollow, how they've done that. They'll keep flipping things. And so it doesn't always stay that Crane is the bad guy when it comes to Reyes. You know, he's the suspicious one. Abby is now, and now Crane, I think, is liking the fact that she likes me now, because I helped solve this.
I'm the favorite kid now.
I'm the favorite kid. I'm the good kid. Yay! Speaking of good kid, bad kid. Good sibling, bad sibling. Not that either one is bad. We have a little peek here of Jenny, too. And the phone call of Hottie. Hottie's not in the episode, but he does still help lead Jenny a little bit. As, okay, Frank is back, and we have an undead, possible undead or demon or something. We've got to get something. And so, of course, Hottie can't make an appearance. But he does send Jenny on a quest for the platinum bullets from the gates of hell. Let's first talk a little bit about Jenny. Again, last episode we had Jenny with her hair down, all beautiful and free. Did you notice how this time she's similar dressed to how she used to be before? Her hair is in a ponytail, the same kind of garb, but it's more loose. The hair's a little bit freer. We're showing Jenny has really relaxed. She's still on this whole quest, but she's not soldier. I only do soldier things. She's a woman now doing all these things.
Yeah. And there was no intensity, and, you know, worrying about the end of the world when she was on the phone with Abby.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the whole squeaky thing when she was trying to dig out the bullets from the dead body, it was like,
I love her saying, you didn't tell me they were in the body. She thought they were just going to be like in his pocket or something. Now, I do have to say,
the final one, you didn't tell me I had to leave one.
That whole thing, as they're pulling out, I even wrote down here in my notes, they were buried in the guy. But what happens when you take them all out, Jenny? That's in my notes. Because I'm like, you're talking on the phone, you're distracted. You never do stuff that's important when you're distracted on the phone, as I was just like, don't take the last one out. So that was a great moment.
I loved it. It was precious. But the whole conversation between Jenny and Abby, the sisterly bond between them, even during the squeaky, gross kind of task. Did you see the Abby's face?
Yes.
It was like she was feeling Jenny's pain, but she was not going to join in. No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I'm glad. Better you than me, Gunga Din, kind of thing. Yeah.
That was exactly it. It was precious.
Well, I say Hadi needs to give a little bit more detailed instructions when he's, you know, when he's trying to help.
Also, Abby did ask a very good question. How did he verify that they were from the gates of hell?
Well, you know,
the Yelp for supernatural treasure hunters.
I have a feeling we're going to be learning a little bit more about Hadi in the upcoming episodes. I wonder how I know that.
I don't know. But hey, more Hadi. I'm in my shiny happy place. Hadi deserves all the time.
Hashtag shiny happy place. Yep.
Shiny happy place, yeah. Let's not forget about my shiny happy place.
I could not. I'm still trying to get an invitation there. Okay, with that, we're going to end this podcast actually pretty close to on time. So thank you for joining us in the second of our Sleepy Hollow Marathon Catch Up 2015 episodes. Make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes using the link on our website or on the podcast platform of your choice. Follow us on Twitter at Sci-Fi for Chicks. Tell us what you think. You can email us sci-fi for chicks@sci-fi4me.com or call the hotline 573-42-SCI-FI. That's 573-427-2434. I dare one of you to use the hotline and call us and leave a comment. I double dog dare you. Triple dog dare you. I don't know if that means anything to you in your, if you know what triple dog is.
No, but I'm familiar with it.
Okay. So we'd really love to hear from you guys. So thank you for joining us for this episode of Sleepy Hollow. Our marathon podcasts continue, catch-up podcasts continue. In our next episode, Hot Mess. I wonder if I was leading something there at the end of our talk about what Hot Mess might be about.
I have no idea. I'm pretty sure I'm going to be surprised.
We'll see you shortly.
See you soon.
Bye.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media.